Welcome to Shattering This. I am Yada. This program is devoted to the largest segment of society, to those of you who have come to realize that all of the world's political, religious, military, economic, and media institutions are corrupt, that they are all counterproductive, that none of them can be fixed, and there aren't any that are worth your loyalty. Our phone number, if you would like to examine these institutions and speak about them, is toll-free 877-300-7645. When I devoted better part of a year to chronicling terrorism, after I wrote Prophet of Doom, and I was dealing with thousands of death threats from Muslims, that's prophetofdoom.net, and I was witnessing the monopoly that Islam was having relative to terrorism. In the midst of this Islamic terrorism timeline, which chronicled terrorism really since the inception of Islam, all the way through, I think I ended it in 2004. One of the things that I noticed, because I detailed the death of every American in Afghanistan and in Iraq prior to and including the year 2004. And one of the things I found out, and it was really an eye-opener for me, it had a profound change on how I viewed the United States military. And that is that the Department of Defense preferred to lie. Given the option of telling the truth or telling the family and the media of about a deceased service man or woman, rather than simply explain what happened, the military almost universally chose to lie. They created artificial scenarios that were easily proven errant. As a matter of fact, the witnesses to the events took to online mediums and said, "I was there," and the Department of Defense explanation is not what occurred. And what we find is that there was a huge percentage of those who were killed that were killed by friendly fire. A very substantial number were killed in accidents. But one of the things that was really horrifying about the whole experience, and this all leads to a story that appeared in most of the major news media today, and so if this is actually going somewhere, I'm not trying to just recreate history, is that the military brass, generals, corporals, not corporals, colonels, on down, have lost the ability to think. I can't tell you if it's the military academy that manufactures unthinking hoorah lemmings, or it's the general education decay in America that indoctrinates in political correctness and discourages the exercise of good judgment. Probably both of those things. But a disproportionate number of deaths were just based on absolute stupidity on behalf of military brass. And one of the things that I learned is that in Iraq, America never engaged Saddam Hussein's military. That there may have been as few as 5 of the 5,000-6,000 American fatalities, military fatalities in Iraq. The overall number of American fatalities is twice that number. But and when you put in suicides based upon what they experienced in Iraq and how horrific that experience was based upon the immorality of the deployment. You know, and it's many, many times that, with 80 returning veterans a day taking their lives. But one of the things that you find is that the America never did fight a military. As few as 5 American fatalities may have come from Saddam Hussein's forces of the 5,000 fatalities of American troops. All the rest were killed by Iraqi civilians that we were sent in there to allegedly liberate. Now, when America was set to invade Iraq, I was in the midst of doing 5 or 6 hour guest segments on talk radio programs a day. I was doing it 6 days a week. I ultimately did some 3,000 guest appearances on talk radio programs across the country. And what I said about Iraq was the same kind of reasoning that I use on many things, where there is no answer that enables, that justifies the response of the majority. And the question I asked, I said, well, if Saddam Hussein has chemicals of mass, weapons of mass destruction, if he has the alleged chemical weapons, and he is poised to use them, if that's the justification for invading Iraq, that he is in violation of a weapons of mass destruction agreement, and he has chemical and biological weapons poised to deploy, then George W. Bush sending American troops into that kind of an environment is akin to murder. You just can't do that. Now, Saddam Hussein had not killed an American. He hadn't threatened America. He had no means of attacking America. America did not have a dog in that fight. And therefore, to send American troops under orders into Iraq to face a barrage of chemical and biological weapons, if they were ready to be deployed in that manner, was incredibly immoral. But if he did not have chemical and biological weapons, if Colin Powell and the Bush regime lied to justify their invasion of Iraq, then there was no justification whatsoever to go in. Well, what we found is that Saddam Hussein did not have a cache of chemical and biological weapons ready to deploy. So we had no justification for going in. But that doesn't mean that he didn't have some chemical and biological weapons. At that same time that I was having these discussions on radio, I reminded Americans that the original stash of chemical and biological weapons, the means to deploy them as well as the means to create them, was a direct result of America. That America decided that we would go to war against Iran via proxy. And so we allied with Saddam Hussein. And we provided him with chemical and biological weapons. So the chemical and biological weapons, for example, that Saddam Hussein used against the Kurds, and by the way, this was not an act of terrorism, it wasn't an act of mass murder. The Kurds, as they are wont to do, turned on their own country. And they took weapons from the Iranians during the middle of that war, and using Iranian weapons inside of Iraq, started killing Iraqis. But the weapons that were deployed, the chemical weapons, those were American. And almost all of the chemical weapons that Saddam Hussein used against Iranians were made by and provided by America. Now, in that context, I want to share a story that appeared today. The U.S. government stands accused of withholding information and actual knowledge about chemical weapons inside Iraq. In one of the bitterest ironies of the Iraq War, a New York Times investigation found American soldiers suffered injuries after being exposed to chemical weapons discovered in Iraq. Now, you might hear that and say, see, you were wrong. There were chemical weapons. We were justified in going in. No. You see, what the New York Times investigation found is these chemical weapons were not the ones that the U.S. went to war over. They never existed. They were old. They were discarded weapons manufactured 25 years earlier in the 1980s with the help from Western countries, principally the United States, who were aiding Iraq in its war against Iran. Yeah, we found chemical weapons, all right. Ones America had built. The Pentagon previously acknowledged that some caches of old chemical weapons were found, but the New York Times identified a score of soldiers who were exposed to those weapons. Something that the Department of Defense and the U.S. government lied about. The weapons consisted of nerve agents, particularly sarin gas, as well as mustard gas. The soldiers were quoted by the Times saying that they were told to keep their discovery secret. Yeah, told a lie. That's what the Department of Defense does. It lies. As a result, they were denied proper medical treatment and as well as the Purple Hearts that soldiers received when wounded in the battlefield. Most importantly, to cover up America's participation in the Iraq-Iran war, where Saddam Hussein was our ally and where we supplied the technology and the ingredients to create chemical and biological weapons. The very thing that we were using to justify our invasion of Iraq, America made them. And America found old, discarded chemical weapons that we had made. And our soldiers were exposed to them. And then we told our soldiers to lie, and then we denied them medical treatment. This is America's Department of Defense. Next time you see a soldier, you ought to think about that. That's an insult to injury. The shells with the mustard gas and sarin gas that were designed to be shot via artillery at the Iranians that were weaponized by America were found in areas of Iraq in the Anbar province that are now controlled by the Islamic State. How about them potatoes, huh? It's just another confirmation that the Department of Defense is very much like the Catholic Church. It will lie when it knows the truth. It will cover up the truth. It will make its own more vulnerable to protect its image. The Roman Catholic Church and the U.S. military are both institutions that should be rejected by everyone, should be denounced by everyone. Just as a parent should not allow their child to do anything in association with the Roman Catholic Church, not go to a Roman Catholic school, not go to a Roman Catholic religious service, never don the door of a Roman Catholic Church. It's child abuse when you do. Irresponsible when you do. No parent should condone their son or daughter engaging in the U.S. military. Irresponsible, particularly if you have a daughter where her likelihood of being sexually abused is about 8 times greater than in any other choice she could make. Particularly since we know that the U.S. military has become so perverted so heinous in its immorality that 600,000 vets and active duty personnel are claiming post-traumatic stress syndrome. 80 vets a day are committing suicide. It's rotten to the core, folks. And it's not doing any good. It's a completely counterproductive institution. You can't name anything that the U.S. military has done over the last 50 years that have made America any more secure, any freer. Not one thing. It hasn't prevented any invasion. Not once has it done anything that was beneficial for America, not in the last 50 years. And even before that, it's open to debate. CNN. Despite airstrikes and international outrage against the Islamic State, the Islamic terrorist group is overrunning Iraqi forces and steadily marching towards a province on Baghdad's doorstep. And as alarming as these developments are, and that they piled up one after another this past week, Iraqi forces threaten to flee if the U.S. does not intervene. A month ago, when the Obamanator used the fake videos of the beheadings to justify a war against the Islamic State, an enemy that he won't even identify, in fact, that he deliberately misidentifies as un-Islamic, I said that this will be counterproductive, that it's going to make a bad situation worse. And what I told all of America is that we need to look at Islam the way we look at Ebola. That the most merciful thing to do is to quarantine it. That the wisest response to Islam is to disassociate. Stop selling weapons. Stop buying oil from Islamic countries. And stop intervening. Don't invade. Don't invest. Don't do what America recently did and get part of a 50-nation consortium to reward Islamic terrorism by providing Hamas with $5 billion. Don't provide hundreds of billions of dollars worth of weapons to Sunni Muslims. Don't provide weapons to Sunni Muslims to take down the Assad regime and then use weapons to destroy the weapons that you've given them. Disengage. Continuing with this article, this is just a short one. It's the realization, this is from CNN, that the Islamic State is moving very fast. The group currently controls about 80% of the Anbar province. If the province falls, the Sunnis would have really the entirety of Iraq and Syria from the middle part of Syria, including almost all of northern Syria. So virtually all of northern Syria, the eastern half of Syria, and the western half of Iraq would all be part of the Islamic State. And they would be within 25 miles of the heart of Baghdad. And much of this, including the takeover of one of the largest Iraqi military training facilities, has all commenced in addition to them securing everything in Syria north to the Turkish border, has transpired since the American war on the Islamic State began. We have Steve, who is called in from Washington State. I want to ahead and make a comment about the beheadings that prompted the war on the Islamic State being fake. Hello, Steve.
Yara, I'm just wondering about these beheadings and these fake beheadings.
Mm-hmm.
If it was the Islamic State that are doing these beheadings, mm-hmm. and they're, mm-hmm. fake, mm-hmm. then something just doesn't add up here. What else that they're doing is fake?
Yeah, there's a lot of misinformation regarding the Islamic State. The beheadings are fake. That's not how Muslim beheadings take place, and I've watched many hundreds of them. So the videos of beheadings of Foley, for example, it's fake. So what else is misinformation about them? Is your question, Steve?
Well, right, because you know, if ISIS is doing all this and doing their advancement by putting, mm-hmm. up fake beheading videos, mm-hmm. it just doesn't seem like that jibes with what they're doing. Why would they put up fake videos like that and still continue to do the barbaric things that they're doing?
It is one of the things that you can tell is inconsistent is that the witnesses in the territories that they have captured speak of them kidnapping girls as young as 5 and raping them and selling them off as sex slaves. Anyone who they don't see as worthy of life, they cut off their heads and they put their heads on the fences around the town. They crucify victims. Decapitations and amputations are commonplace. They are ruthless in their torture. And so someone who is going to gang rape a 5, 6, 7-year-old girl, who is going to cut off hundreds of heads and place them around a community on stakes, someone who will go into a community and torture individuals and saw off hands and feet. They aren't going to produce a video that talks about a beheading, but does not show the beheading. That's one of the ways you can tell it's fake. So it's
right.
So then the question becomes, why would they even promote this and produce it for the Western media? And the reasons are that the Western media is unwilling to show the gruesome nature of Islam. And that makes it possible for the Western media, particularly misled media institutions like CNN, to continue to promote the myth that these are extremists and that they don't represent Islam. And so they knew, and the media knows, and so does the Islamic State, that if they were to show the actual gruesomeness, the hideousness of what Islam does in terms of turning a person into a savage, that it would be very difficult, if not impossible, for the average person not to recognize that, wow, Islam is a more gruesome, more debilitating, more caustic disease than Ebola. And so the Islamic State knows that if they actually produce something for the West that is that graphic, it would turn on them. And the Western media won't even show it. But if they talk, you know, and you have a guy with a nice British accent and they have a little chat and they have their victim say some bad things about America, never, ever bring up Islam, then, you know, it shows them having a bitter battle
less
with America.
Barbaric.
Right, and less barbaric and more thoughtful. And what the Islamic State wanted was for America to declare war on them. You know, America is considered the great Satan in the world of Islam. And so if you're hated by and hunted by and attacked by America, then you're meaningful as an Islamic institution. And so you don't really get esteem and prestige in the jihadi world unless you're being criticized and attacked by America. And it's been a Allah send for the jihadists. By America declaring war on them, they've tripled in size. They've gained enormous amounts of territory, enormous numbers of recruits, and enormous caches of weapons. So it's worked exactly as they had anticipated.
Do you think they want Assad out of power?
Yeah, they do. And what's really so amazing is that Assad is among the most heinous dictators in modern world history. There's an expose being put out right now, I think it's in the Holocaust Museum, of tens of thousands of photographs of Syrian civilians who were tortured to death by the Assad regime. I mean, this man is a blight on humanity. He is savage beyond just comprehension. And the two groups that were the most effective in taking him out of power were the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, now just the Islamic State, and al-Nusra. But when America started bombing, they bombed al-Nusra and the Islamic State. Al-Nusra doesn't even exist anymore. They merged into the Islamic State. And the Islamic State now is battling the Kurds and taking over the rest of Iraq and is doing very little fighting now against Assad. And so it was an extraordinarily dim-witted move that America made. It was awesomely inappropriate to go to war against a group. Now, I would go and I would not be supporting the Islamic State, mind you, because I think they're actually worse than Assad. But we certainly ought not be going to war and dropping bombs to fend off a group that is trying to unseat a devil from power.
Well, it's one among many bad moves we've made. But
yes, it is.
That's
why I think we'd be safer without a military, because we would be less likely to intervene and do things that are counterproductive and indeed suicidal if we did not have one. I mean, we would not have made a bad situation worse in Afghanistan. We would have made a bad situation infinitely worse in Iraq and in Syria and in Libya had we not had one. I mean, so we are making the world less safe, and particularly America, putting it at greater risk because we have a military and we're deploying it. And we're using our military to taunt the Russians and the Chinese simultaneously. So we make very bad decisions militarily and politically as a nation.
You know, I can see what I can see is a gang pile, dog pile on us by the Russians and the Chinese and possibly Pakistan and all the nuclear powers.
Yeah.
Just, you know, finally, we're tired of the United States. We're going to pile on you.
Yeah, we've certainly done that to Russia, and we're very close to having done it to China. You know, we've gotten Russia now to the point where I wouldn't blame Russia for just saying the hell with the United States. I mean, the United States is just a cesspool of vomit. We're tired of being accused and attacked by the United States. We got nothing to lose by declaring that the United States is an enemy of peace in the world. Now, the Chinese are doing it. The rhetoric of the Chinese are doing it. I mean, the Chinese are consistently exposing and condemning the hypocrisy and the belligerence of the United States.
We're going to get them financially too, I believe. I think that comes into play also.
Well, the Chinese is kind of interesting. They were the largest holder, and they still are the largest international holder of T-bills. But their holdings of T-bills is unchanged over the last 7 or 8 years. And what they're doing is they realize that if they're a seller of T-bills, then they devalue the billions of dollars of T-bills that they currently own, actually trillions of dollars worth of T-bills that they own. And so they can't sell them without devaluing those that they still own and causing their value to plummet. And yet they're trying not to buy any more than the absolute minimum they would have to buy to maintain the value of what they currently own, which is why the United States had to go to quantitative easing and use smoke and mirrors to create the illusion of being financially stable. But the balance of trade with China is so negative, and we are so dependent on China in terms of our economy now. We're really vulnerable to China. And most politicians, particularly Obama, when he constantly besmirches China, as dependent as the U.S. economy is on China, if China were to say, you know, we've just had it with the United States, no more trade, America is screwed, blue, and tattooed. I mean, we would be in for a recession beyond 1929. And so we really ought not be yanking the tail of China at this point. There may have been a time. Now is not that time. They won economically. Reuters is reporting that American-led forces have sharply intensified their airstrikes in the past 2 days against the Islamic State that are threatening the Kurds on Syria's Turkish border. After the Islamic State jihadist advance began to destabilize Turkey. This is something we talked about yesterday. You really need to understand the religion and the ethnicity as well as the history of a region before you go in and think that you can make an improvement by bombing it. The Kurds, you know, part of me says, you know, you ought to be concerned about the Kurds. They're the world's largest ethnic minority without a homeland. They have been abused by the Iranians, the Iraqis, and the Turks, and especially the Turks, where most of them live, for decades. And yet the world views the Kurds as a terrorist organization. Now, the Kurds have done some stupid stuff. I mean, they brought the destruction, the gassing of their own town upon themselves when they decided as Iraqis that they would side with the Iranians in the Iraq-Iran war. And I want to tell you that in the Iraq-Iran war, there was the lesser of two evils. Saddam Hussein was by far the lesser of those two evils. As a matter of fact, in the invasion of Kuwait and the anticipated invasion of Saudi Arabia by Saddam Hussein in Iraq, the lesser of the two evils was Iraq and Saddam Hussein, not Kuwait or Saudi Arabia, who America went to war on behalf of. And so the Kurds joined the wrong side, the Shias, against the Sunnis. And, of course, the Kurds are doing it again. The Kurds are Sunnis, Muslims, and yet they're aligning with the Shia Muslims in Iran to fight the Islamic State. And they have done all manner of lying about why they should be given weapons. I mean, they are not to be trusted. The PKK is a terrorist organization. It's a Kurdish political organization. And right now, because of the way that Turkey is responding to all of this, because Erdogan and Assad were best pals. They used to vacation together. But when America invaded Iraq, and Assad went from having his allegiance with the Ba'athist nature of Saddam Hussein's political regime in Iraq to Iraq being given to Iran as a result of America's invasion, and therefore Syria becoming a client of Iran. Well, that destroyed the relationship between Erdogan, a Sunni, and Assad. And he became a foe of Assad. So the Islamic State, he has allowed a huge number of jihadists for the Islamic State to come through Turkey. That's the primary way that Mujahideen jihadists have joined the Islamic State is going through Turkey. Well, now the Kurds are the boots on the ground fighting the Islamic State. And yet the Kurds are the enemies of the Turks. The Turks have been at war with the Kurds for 30 or 40 years. Longer than that in their entire history, but savagely for 30 or 40 years. Matter of fact, for the last decade until quite recently, American warplanes, attack helicopters and fighter jets were used to bomb the Kurds inside of Turkey on a daily basis. Something most Americans don't know, but the Turkish government were using NATO weaponry to bomb the Kurds in eastern Turkey on a daily basis. And there was a period of time even when the Turkish government was bombing Kurdish positions inside of northern Iraq. So now that the Kurds are the only boots on the ground willing to combat the Islamic State, the Turks say, what are we going to do here? You know, we want the Islamic State to go after Assad. We like it when the Islamic State is battling the Kurds. The last thing we want to do is provide America with our bases so that they can support the Kurds in bombing the Islamic State and thereby protecting Assad and enabling the most destabilizing force within the country of Turkey. And recently, the Kurds, to show their animosity with Turkey's unwillingness to participate, have begun to riot. So by not understanding the history and the complexity of this region, America once again has made a bad situation worse.